M42, number 3B.
Well, what did Asamu show here? Oh, so beautiful. So beautiful. He just showed, look here, you can't build up your government. You can't build up your life on killing, on destroying, on destroying. You have to build up your government, you have to build up your life on the fatherhood sense of always supporting, maintaining, providing what is worthwhile providing. He didn't believe that he could establish his kingship by killing everybody who was against him. He believed that he could build up his business, his kingship, his life on the fact that life provides, that life is a fatherhood and is fathering the whole universe. Actually, one has to be careful when one reads the Old Testament. It's a tricky language because, as I said, they didn't have an exact language and they had to use symbolism. So that sometimes you see here all through the story, you know, killing, 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 killing all over the place. And you wonder what is good about the whole story, whatever is being done, killing and killing and killing. Now, one has to be, when one reads it, one has to be aware, you see, what killing means in that Old Testament stories, you see. You can have killing in the way that David just killed them all over. Huh? And on the other hand, you see him that if somebody came along and said, I have killed Saul, that he killed him. But he killed the messenger. Huh? You see what he... So it seems as if he would be schizophrenic,
yeah.
Doing one thing and the other thing. But naturally, you must read behind the story, you see. Whenever he killed error. Whenever he was not in agreement that somebody killed good or killed something that should have preserved or so, he said, no, this must die. I kill that. Huh? That sense that you think you can do anything good by killing. Huh? So he killed that. Because that's another way of killing. Huh? So one has to be very, very careful in reading the story. Here, for instance, in the tone of life, you know, we have that story that the son of Saul, now you must help me, his name was Is-Boshet, or the Is-Boshet, whatever, huh? Well, you don't know either, happy enough, so we can go on. Whatever his name was, it doesn't really matter. He was a son of Saul, and so two captains David found him and thought, here is another one of the tribe of Saul, of the family of Saul, let's kill them and kill them. And they came back and were very proud of what they were doing, huh? Came back to David and said, oh, here you have the head of Is-Boshet. And so what did David do? He killed the messenger. Meaning, I don't want to establish my kingdom by killing everybody who is against me. You see? He thought, this is not right, that because they were a son of Saul, that they should be killed. What have they to do? You see? It's like in my time, you see, because I was against the Mother Church, my family had to suffer under it, you see. So they went after my mother, who was a wonderful practitioner, and built 3 or 4 churches in Switzerland in her lifetime, because I went out of it. Well, the blood feud started, and then they went after her, and after all the others, you see, and gave a hell of a life to the family. It's no use to it. They were very loyal to the mother church. Can you see, you cannot build up something by destroying. That's what he wanted to bring out. You see the tone of life here, huh? Though it has to do with killing. It had to do here all the time also with that tone of exalting oneself above everything. So the symbol of being above was always Jerusalem, because Jerusalem was on high, on the hill on high. Therefore was always a symbol of exaltation of life. That's why Jesus was crucified in Jerusalem. And he went up to Jerusalem, took Jerusalem. He exalted himself right away and said, and could see that by doing that, he would really be king over Israel. And so at that moment, Israel came to David and said, let's unite. You can be king also over Israel. Because at the beginning, in the tone of principle, he was only king of Judah. And that only at the point of life, when he had that sense of fatherhood, of uniting everything and supporting everything, and not being in opposition to the whole idea of Israel, they came to him and asked him to be king over them. Again, a sense of exaltation. A very nice point about life. You see, they had to use funny ways of describing something, the exaltation of life. You know how the ark was brought back to Jerusalem? The ark was always the symbol of the presence of God. And so the ark played a terrific importance in the life of Israel. And so they brought the ark back to Jerusalem. And David danced before the ark. Well, it looks funny, huh, to figure out the king of Israel dancing before the ark. Huh? One feels this is not dignified. You know, one can understand it. Similar, I had so many similar experiences in the pioneering time, when one just was happy in every way, humanly happy, when one began to see that the idea was breaking through. And I just can't see David dancing before the Lord, huh? That he could say, golly, we did it, huh? By Jove, we did it now, huh? And that he had to find an expression of joy for all the accomplishment. And naturally his wife, as it sometimes happens, she didn't agree with it. She despised him. See? She despised him for that wonderful spiritual expression of exaltation. Felt that was not dignified for a king. He perhaps should be carried on a throne through the streets and just benignly waving, like this. That would perhaps be much nicer. But she could no more have children all her life. You see? Can you see the tone of life? Life went out of her. True life went out of her. She had no children all her life. And so here you must read the tonality of it, what happens. Can just see how after all those many years in the wilderness and fighting and being chased like an animal all over the place, finally getting through to the success and being exalted above Israel and Judah as king, that he felt the right to rejoice in it. And if you take out that, you are dead. There is no more joy in this science, no more joy in finding new ideas in science. if that goes out of it, if we are not just full of joy and full of expectancy and everything, when we see a new idea coming forth in our study and see a new angle of it, something deeper in it, if that joy goes out, we are finished. It dies on us. There is no more children. There are no more children. And so this is a very nice a symbol there of life. You have the, then comes all that sense that the Lord says that the mercy of the Lord shall never depart anymore for all your life. You have the mercy of life, the gift of life, that comes now and says, it will never go away from you. If you really stand above the turmoil of fighting for the idea, then the grace, the mercy of the Lord will no more leave you all your life. So that with long life will I satisfy him, said the Lord. With long life will I satisfy him. So the Lord preserved David whithersoever he went. Can you hear the tone of life, the fatherhood of life? He preserved him. You see, it's no more the safety, as in Saul, where you had to fight for your safety. Now it's the preservation of life wherever he went. That was the promise on him. And then David again showed the fatherhood sense to his former enemy, namely to the house of Saul. He said to himself, well, if Saul didn't like me, that's his business, but that doesn't apply to his house, to all his sons. So he was inquiring, is there nobody left of the house of Saul? And finally they found out, Mephibosheth, is that the name? That was the last son that survived the house of Saul. And so he restored to him all the land that belonged to Saul. Can you see? He didn't say, well, finally Saul is out of the way, so let's wipe out the rest of it too, so that there is no more anybody coming up and claiming the throne of Saul. No, he restored his land, and he took him to his home, and he could eat at his table for all his life. You see the fatherhood sense? Yeah? That goes right through everything. Thou shalt eat bread by my table continually. That's government through life. Huh? Isn't that a beautiful tone? At that point one begins to see that if through principle, and has put everything back into principle and says, let principle do the job. Let principle work out the whole situation. That then afterwards one has to be careful not to destroy all that which is not pleasant to us. But to say, if principle has to work out everything, then my job is to maintain and support and provide everything. And so he expressed that terrific sense of exaltation of life being expressed by the abundance of life, by giving and supplying everybody what needs to be supplied without having lack, any sense of lack. The fatherhood, huh? Yeah. All right. Did we get that one? Oh. Isn't that completely different again from principle. This is another point of method in text interpretation. Always when you consider a new subject and you come and you get the tone of the new subject, then you will even see that new subject better when you compare it with the preceding ones. That's why in the study of the synonymous term we have the same rule, so to say, that we say to a student, don't stay with the first synonymous term, mind, until you feel now I got it completely. That's a drive of a very devoted student, a student that takes it seriously. He said, I'm not going any further to spirit. I don't know yet mind completely. I want to give more time to mind. And they may stay with it, I don't know how many donkeys year long. Whereas what they should do is to get the first touch of it and then go to spirit and try to get the touch of it and then compare. Because we can only get the true sense of mind when we know something about spirit and soul, principle, life, truth and love. Only by comparison. See, the comparison is a way of understanding. Because that is, you know what we said right at the beginning? Science is really that which can differentiate, and the more we differentiate, the more understanding we have. You see, the differentiation gives the understanding. Therefore, we must see that we get the differentiation as quickly as possible. So, when we study here now these tones, we should always stop after one tone and say, now, can I really see this clear, crystal clear? And I can only see it crystal clear if I see it very distinct from the subject that went before. Yes? So if you compare it with mind, with the Hannah story having its fulfillment up in Samuel's account, there was no sense of fatherhood there, of supplying, of maintaining. Not at all a term. There was always only the tone there, how can I see mind and mind's vision? Or if you take the second period, where we had all that spiritual qualities of quantity versus quality, was completely different in tonality. It was a question on what shall I rely? Shall I rely on numbers or shall I rely on few? Shall I rely on spiritual qualities or shall I rely on strong men, one head higher than the rest of it? See? Had nothing to do with fatherhood. Or the third one of soul, of being constantly chased through the wilderness, that has nothing to do with soul. Or of principle, where they showed that only if you always bring every idea back to its cause, to its origin, to its principle, you have a right government, you have the possibility that that principle proves itself. Isn't it different? This is the thing you have to do to sit back. Do sit back enough. Don't always read and study. Think about what one has studied. Just sit back and contemplate and weigh in your consciousness the difference between the various tones. And that helps that the letter becomes the spirit. Yes, so that's life. We would come to truth. And truth is quite a unique tone in this story about David. Something quite terrific. When one reads that tone or that whole paragraph, oh yes, I should ask first. Now, what is that sixth period? What stands out there? What is shown there as the overall message? It's the emergence of true manhood, yes? And in which way does true manhood emerge there?
Well, there are various stories. For instance, the story of his affair with Bathsheba.
Yes.
And the question of Absalom. Mm-hmm.
Bill, would you remember, I mean, this is not in the assignment, would you remember in Jesus' life story, Matthew, what comes in truth? Perhaps not, huh?
No, I don't.
If I don't remember, you should ask me at the end of the David story, perhaps to show you the parallel story of David's life and of Jesus' life in Matthew. Huh? Because this seems to be the two only stories in the Bible where a whole life of a man is shown. And actually it would be nice to compare the Old Testament with the New Testament. In the Jesus' life, at the tone of truth, we see also what you call the emergence of true manhood. But in Jesus' story, it is from the point of view of having a divine consciousness all through. It is showing from the Christ standpoint that the Christ consciousness is really building up what we will call the compound idea man there, because it was not only Jesus as himself being presented as man, but showing that the whole world together constitute a compound idea in which all ideas work together for Jesus. Huh? Now here, in the David story, it is different. It is the emergence of manhood, but typically for the Old Testament, and therefore perhaps more adapted or more has more relation to us, because somehow we are much more coming from the Adam dream than Jesus was, and therefore we are in our humanhood much nearer to the story of David and experience much more the story of David than we experience Jesus' life mission. Therefore, in this story here of truth, it is shown how, in spite of the fact that we are immortal, that in spite that, therefore, we are an erring mortal, that the true idea of man pulls through, emerges. This is perhaps the great difference that is shown here, because David is shown here as making one mistake after the other. And that is what the story makes so big, because he doesn't lose his kingship forever. He shows that in spite of error, in spite of his mortal, or of our mortal consciousness of humanhood, that the idea cannot be held back, that the idea is not destroyed, that the idea is working through just the same. And it is only a matter of knowing how to deal with our mortal manhood. That's the point. Whereas Jesus would never have to do that. He didn't have to deal with his mortal manhood, because as the Son of God, he had a Christ consciousness. It says that he lived without sin. Whereas David lived with sin, just as we do. Well, sin is naturally meant in a, not in a moral sense, but saying in an erring consciousness. And so many erring facets of our life enter in and get the upper hand. So the question is, are we done with? Are we finished by it? Or are they a help? Are they a factor that can be made a blessing? And that's what David chose. That's why he's so human, compared perhaps with Jesus as an exemplar. Yes. So, we'll see this afternoon when we go through the story, really, how the various facets of mortal manhood, human manhood, come up. And that in a certain way this mortal manhood and human manhood can be a help, sometimes how they can be a downfall for us, and then showing that if we go back to our divine manhood, that these facts can be a servant for us, and not a hindrance for us, not a downfall for us. It all depends on how we deal with them. And the story here is wonderful to show how he dealt with the mortal manhood, like with the Bathsheba interlude, how he dealt with the human manhood, like Joab, you call him Joab? Joab, the captain he had, a very faithful captain he had, general. He was a wonderful man, terrific man. But he didn't have any womanhood sense, and therefore he was a help in one way, and in another way he wasn't a help. Yes. So we will do that this afternoon.